After the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Justice Clarence Thomas hinted that contraceptives and their availability need to be reexamined. This has led to federal legislation, which recently passed the House, that attempted to preserve access to birth control products. With us now to examine this issue and what needs to be understood about that attempted legislation, especially when it comes to term definitions, is the Cato Burns Senior Fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Mary Hassan. How are you today, Mary?
I am great. Thank you very much for having me on.
I'll learn more about the work, the focus, the points, the information from the Ethics and Public Policy Center. It is eppc.org, and yes, we do have that link up at our website. It was called the Right to Contraception Act, which is one of those cases. The title always sounds glamorous, but when you look at the nuts and the bolts of a bill, you usually wind up with a different picture. The stated purpose, the measure would have created a statutory right for people to access birth control and protect a range of contraceptive methods, as well as ensure healthcare providers have a right to provide contraception services to patients. Sounds fair, sounds legal, sounds ethical, but there were problems within the bill. As I referred to in the introduction, how certain terms were defined raised some concerns.
Exactly. This is really a wolf in sheep's clothing. So there is nothing about this bill that simply aims to preserve the status quo, and yet that's how it's being represented, to keep the playing field the same, to make sure there's no threat to women's access to contraceptives. So that's the promise. But what the reality is that in this bill, they have defined contraceptives in a very broad way that has never been done before, to include sterilization. Sterilization is typically treated differently under the law because, unfortunately, in the U.S., there is a terrible history of coercing poor women and minorities and indeed doing sterilizations without their informed consent. So there are currently very strict laws under Title 10 that requires someone to be 21 and to give their informed consent to a sterilization and then to wait 30 days to ensure that there isn't coercion. Under this bill, by simply defining contraceptives to include sterilization with none of these safeguards and specifically saying you can't impede that right, what that actually means is that minors can request to be sterilized without parental consent of minors of any age, no safeguards against coercion or impulsive behavior, nothing. So this bill, that's just one of the many problems here, but I think that's a big one just in the definition, because it goes way beyond what the status quo is today.
And adds to the importance of actually reading these bills before you cast a vote on them. The vote, by the way, in the House was 228 to 195. 8 Republicans joined all the Democrats. And the bill later was blocked, at least for the time being, in the U.S. Senate with some alternatives proposed, which we'll get to in a moment. But my having read this bill, correct me if I'm wrong on this, would this in theory also make it illegal to deny hormones or a hysterectomy to any trans-identified person who wants those procedures for the purpose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there are two other problems with the bill, and this the one you just named is the second. It when it talks about sex and the fact that people will now have, under this bill, a quote, right to contraception, which can't be denied on the basis of race, nationality, et cetera, but sex, and then they say parentheses, including gender identity, and by doing that, there also is another provision in the bill that says contraceptives include devices and medicine, even if it's used for another purpose. So people who identify as transgender want hormones and they want surgery. So you can take hormones that might be prescribed for contraceptive purposes and instead say, well, I want them for this other purpose, for transgender transition. And under this bill, you know, the physicians aren't going to have a right to refuse that, and people are going to be given a right to say, I have to have access to this. That's what's guaranteed to me under this bill. So it's kind of a backhanded way of trying to impose a requirement on physicians to say, you have to provide transgender medicines or devices or surgeries, anything that's going to enhance that transition. And then the third problem with this bill, which is related to this issue, is that it specifically says you can't claim a religious or moral exemption. You can't say, okay, if that's what the law is, people can have access to contraception, fine, but don't involve me. I can't be forced to participate. That conscience-based objection or that religious-based objection is specifically not allowed under this bill. It specifically singles out the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which has been very important to permit people of faith, any faith, who have a conscience-based or religious or even moral objection to performing certain actions, is protected them from the law trying to impose an obligation to require them to do that. So this bill would say, erase that. No more religious exemptions. We're just going to call that refusal or obstruction in a woman's pursuit of her contraceptive or her constitutional right to contraceptive access. So it's, again, that's not the lead headline, right? The lead is always, oh, this is just to secure women's access to contraception. And in reality, it's not. It's redefining contraceptives to include both sterilization and, in a backhanded way, procedures for gender transition. And then it specifically says, and by the way, you people who are religious or who have moral objections, too bad. Under this statute, you don't get to practice your faith or simply decline to participate in this. We're not going to allow you to have recourse to any of these defenses on the basis of religion.
Talking with Mary Hausen, who is the Cato Burns Senior Fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, eppc.org is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. With that all being said, it seems like the proponents of that legislation, I guess in a variety of ways, they were taking, there were subsequent rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, but the foundation for them was really Griswold v. Connecticut, 1965, mm-hmm. which went up against the I think it was centuries old ban in Connecticut against any availability mm-hmm. for contraception, with the Supreme Court mm-hmm. in a 7-2 decision saying that, well, a few of the justices among the seven looked at the First, Third, Fourth, and Ninth Amendments, but most of them agreed under the Ninth and 14th Amendments, Due Process Clause, the 14th, be more exact. Mm-hmm. This is a ban that cannot happen. The act that just passed the House and failed in the Senate seemed to want to use that as a foundation while actually expanding what Griswold was really focused on ruling on.
Yeah, so there's a kind of a sleight of hand in terms of language. So first of all, in the Dobbs case, which this contraceptive bill is supposedly a response to that, because they've portrayed this false narrative that all of a sudden contraception and people's access to contraception is at risk. Dobbs specifically said it was ruling simply on the abortion question. As you rightly point out, the legal rights to contraceptive access are under other decisions, not the Roe decision. It started earlier, the Griswold decision. Those have not been overturned. So this is an opportunistic move by Democrats, not to try to preserve a status quo, but to push things farther. And that should trouble all of us. And I think it's especially troubling when people, legislators and others, sort of reflexively support this and say, "Oh, contraception, I'm for it," without actually reading it and understanding this is going to hinder religious conscience rights or medical conscience rights. It's going to worsen a current situation where parents are locked out of decision making by minors regarding sensitive issues of sexuality, contraception, and instead expand that to say, oh, we're even going to allow minors to seek sterilization without parental consent, with no notice, no waiting period, no nothing, no age minimum. So they're really pushing things forward when there is no threat. There is, those decisions that granted contraceptive access have not been overturned. You had one justice referring to it, or referring to the general problem of substantive rights being granted in sort of a vague sense in terms of privacy. But that's not the same as overruling a decision. There certainly aren't five votes for that.
I was going to say, too, if it, obviously a case has to come before the court for what Justice Thomas is prioritizing to come to pass, but he might be a crowd of one given the history of the decisions. And if you look at Supreme Court decisions with Griswold, that's a surprisingly brief, direct and concise one. So there really isn't an opportunity for someone to claim interpretation in it because it's just that to the point.
Right, right. And I think another thing that is deceptive about the contraceptive bill and any variations that they're putting forward, they're trying to rewrite the history. So in the findings of the bill, they say the Supreme Court has always acknowledged a constitutional right to contraception. Well, that's not exactly true. The line of cases acknowledges a right of privacy, and the basis for that shifted over time through all the abortion jurisprudence. But contraception was a derivative claim from that privacy right. So, you know, they're putting forth an altered history as if we have all these cases saying specifically there's a constitutional right to contraceptives and to have this, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so it matters to get the history right and to ground your claims in genuine constitutional rights. And then, as you say, only to litigate the question that comes before you. So it's just an overblown hoax, almost a threat that is trumped up in order to advance a progressive agenda here, to further keep parents out of these important decisions that minors could be making, to make the federal government continue its involvement in funding and facilitating things, including the use of contraceptives, hormones, et cetera, for abortive purposes. So it's just a grab bag of progressive tricks, really, to forward their agenda rather than an attempt to ensure the status quo remains as such. And there really is no threat to the status quo.
We used to make a joke when Nancy Pelosi said we have to pass the bill before we know what's in the bill. But as Mary has explained here, it's vital to read the bill before you vote on the bill. And certainly you as a citizen of this country, having whatever your belief system is, you also have access to read these bills, too, through the Senate website, the House website, and contact your member of that body to say, what's your vote going to be? Either good or no, I don't think so. And voice your opinion because, as I say often, they're the employee, you're the boss. And if the employee doesn't follow along with what the bosses want, we know what should be happening to that employee. Learn more about the Ethics and Public Policy Center at eppc.org. She is a Kate Mulburn Senior Fellow with the aforementioned Ethics and Public Policy Center. Mary Austin, thank you so much for the clarifying of what a lot of people like to confuse only because that's the only way they can win their point, but it's organizations and people like yourself that cut through all that and help us all understand the reality. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much.